Hello, I'm Kevin Keith. In this episode of Skeptical Ethics, I'd like to address some topics raised by my fellow Skeptical Connections contributor, Squid Octo, in his interesting segment entitled Consciousness Consensus from Episode 4. Squid Octo notes that there's a lack of strong consensus among philosophers, animal rights activists, and scientists as to whether some or all animals possess consciousness. But he ends with an observation on the moral implications of this question, citing biologist and animal welfare activist Marion Stamp Dawkins, who holds that animal behavior studies have not succeeded in clearly demonstrating animal consciousness, but that that is not a necessary precursor to concluding that animal welfare is an important moral issue. I'd like to consider that question in more detail. Before we start, let me remind listeners that Skeptical Ethics is a series that attempts to apply skeptical reasoning to value-based issues such as moral or cultural controversies. New listeners, or those who want to review the basic conceptual grounding of that enterprise, may wish to download the first Skeptical Ethics segment, Does Skepticism Lead to Agreement?, from Skeptical Connections Episode 2, and the next, Moral Agreement Among Skeptics, from Episode 3, for useful background. The issue of how we ought to treat animals, and whether we may make use of them for our own benefit in the form of food, physical labor, or for materials such as leather and ivory, is a persistent one that evokes strong convictions from all sides. There are several ways of framing that issue. We won't get into all of them in this segment. But the central question is that of the moral status of animals. The moral status of animals has to do with whether they are the sorts of things that have moral interests, and therefore fall under moral rules, limiting what we may do to them and regulating how they are to be treated. Not everything is. Inanimate objects do not have moral interests. Living things such as plants, it's almost universally agreed, do not have moral interests. The large majority of people, I'm sure, would agree that most animals, including virtually all invertebrates, and likely many vertebrates, such as fish, for instance, also do not have moral interests. We don't have to consider whether it's morally wrong to use worms or insects, or minnows for that matter, as bait, or to kill them as pests. They don't have the kind of moral status that would make it a question of moral right or wrong to do such things. But many people suspect that at least some non-human animals, perhaps apes, perhaps whales and dolphins, perhaps all mammals, perhaps all vertebrates, do have moral interests that must be respected, and therefore qualify for protection of those interests on moral grounds. Some would go even further than this. Noted philosopher and animal rights activist Peter Singer has said that he suspects that the category of inclusion would extend at least as far as crustaceans and possibly shellfish such as clams and oysters. How do we make these distinctions? What determines whether a living being has moral interests? By moral interest, I mean things that are important or clearly good or bad to them on moral grounds, and which thus qualify for recognition on moral grounds by others. Starting at the most basic level, to have moral interests, it must first be possible to have interests at all, that is, to actively experience things as being, in fact, good or bad. At the very least, this requires some level of sentience, the ability to experience feelings, including pain or pleasure. Humans, of course, are keenly aware of their own lives and experiences. From observation and from what we know of their neural apparatus, it is almost impossible to imagine that worms, however, have anything like such an awareness. Worms can retreat from noxious stimuli and move toward food sources, but those are clearly just neurally hardwired or reflex behaviors. We don't think they're feeling pleasure or displeasure in doing so. So it's easy to agree that humans have moral interests and worms do not. This also suggests that for more complex animals with nervous systems more sophisticated than those of worms, but less so than those of humans, there must be a dividing line somewhere that distinguishes sentient animals from those that are non-sentient on the basis of their capacity to experience stimuli, including pleasure and pain. At this point, we should introduce and make distinctions between several related concepts. The criteria for having moral interests that I just described are fairly minimal, simply the ability to experience pain and pleasure. But there are morally significant capacities that go far beyond this. One is self-awareness, the recognition of oneself as an unique individual. This requires more sophisticated mental capacities than merely experiencing pain. It requires an active mental awareness of one's experiences, not merely the ability to detect them. How can we determine whether an individual has self-awareness or not? A variety of clever tests have been proposed. One classic is the mirror test, in which a subject is tested to see if they recognize that they themselves and the individual they perceive in the mirror are the same individual. Reportedly, apes can pass this test, but not all monkeys can. On the other hand, there's evidence that dolphins and some birds can pass it. Interestingly, young human infants cannot pass the test, but typically gain the ability to do so, which is to say, gain a recognition of themselves as individuals, at around 18 months. This is further evidence that a certain level of mental development is required to possess this capacity, greater than that for mere sentience. One of the most significant concepts related to questions of moral standing is that of personhood, or being a moral person. A person is an individual with a fully developed sense of self and consciously experienced goals and desires, someone who experiences their own life as the source of value or good. This is far more than self-awareness. It is an engagement with the moral contents of one's life, actively recognizing and valuing the things that matter to oneself, and it necessarily requires greater mental capacity. Most people agree that only humans attain the capacity for personhood, though some argue that some apes and maybe other vertebrates do so as well. Note also that not all humans qualify as persons. Embryos, fetuses, possibly even young infants, as well as brain-dead or irreversibly vegetative patients, clearly are not moral persons, an issue that is significant for discussions of abortion and life support, which we may address in future segments of Skeptical Ethics. At this point, we can return to the issue named at the beginning of the segment, consciousness. How is consciousness related to these different types of mental capacities, and how do they relate to the issue of moral status? The answer is surprisingly unclear. Consciousness has no precise definition in the context we're discussing. The term is sometimes used synonymously with any of the capacities we've discussed, sentience, self-awareness, and personhood, or others. Thus, it can be misleading to talk about animal consciousness, or to rely on it to anchor an argument about animals' moral status without clarifying just what mental functions it encompasses. Given different types or levels of consciousness, it's necessary to ask which of them correlates to what is morally significant rather than merely what neurological functions they represent. But this is not an easy question to answer. Squidocto quoted the so-called Cambridge Declaration on Animal Consciousness, published by a working group of neuroscientists. The statement claims, among other things, quote, "The absence of a neocortex does not appear to preclude an organism from experiencing affective states. Convergent evidence indicates that non-human animals have the neuroanatomical, neurochemical, and neurophysiological substrates of conscious states along with the capacity to exhibit intentional behaviors." End quote. This appears to suggest that animals with less sophisticated neural systems than humans may be conscious. But notice that in just the first two sentences of this statement, there appear three different references to mental capacities. Affective states, which are similar to sentient experiences, conscious states, which is not defined, and the capacity to exhibit intentional behaviors, which is closer to but not synonymous with personhood. This supposedly scientific view of consciousness actually cites a variety of different neural functions comprising very different mental capacities as evidence of a state it does not define. There's an obvious link between the identification of moral interests, at whatever level, and the claim of moral status granting protection from harm on moral grounds. It is for this reason that the issue of animal consciousness looms so large in discussions of animal welfare. But we see now that not only is consciousness difficult to define, there are different types or degrees of capacity for having moral interests, and these may or may not grant moral status depending on what we take the significant moral criterion to be. That issue has been the focus of tremendous controversy among animal activists, as well as between them and those who do not endorse moral status for non-human animals. That brings us back to the claim from Marion Stamp Dawkins that animal consciousness is not the standard for animal welfare. Dawkins' argument has two major thrusts. She believes that the scientific evidence for animal consciousness is not yet strong enough, and therefore is a weak ground for animal welfare arguments. Also, she thinks that a strong case for animal welfare can be made on the grounds that animals are so important to human welfare. She concludes that we should protect animals because we eat them and use them for agriculture, rather than refuse to protect animals for the same reasons, as many people see it. So what can we conclude about animal consciousness and the moral status of animals? A skeptical reading of the scientific approach to consciousness suggests that it remains, so far, an open question. The moral arguments for animal protection may thus have to be made on other grounds, as Marion Stamp Dawkins suggests, or await the expansion of our scientific knowledge of animals' mental capacities. Significantly, Peter Singer and other philosophers are currently actively participating in scientific research projects along exactly those lines for exactly these reasons. Animal consciousness and animal welfare thus form an exciting and important test case for the skeptical approach to the intersection between scientific data and moral conclusions. Stay tuned! I'd be happy to hear your questions or comments directed to skepticalconnections.com.